ladies, gentlemen, and disappointments. We are coming to you live from the Woman Caves in New York and Connecticut. My name is Leslie.
And my name is Melissa.
And we are Verbally Disastrous. This podcast is copyrighted through the U.S. Copyright Office as well as the Writers Guild of America. Hello, everyone. This is your host, Leslie M. Jasper, of the Verbally Disastrous podcast that can be found on over 20 podcast platforms, including YouTube. For this episode, I'm going to share with you some stories where I first came into the business in the construction world as an apprentice electrician. I have some initial lessons learned very early on in my electrical career, as well as some interesting characters that I met along the way. Obviously, I have 26 years worth of stories within the union. Therefore, it's going to take time to map them all out. So these are a few that I encountered relatively early in my career. I recently celebrated my 26th anniversary as a union journeywoman electrician here in New York. That was on December 10th, 1995. It's fair to say that I've evolved quite a bit since my early days as a construction and electrician in the U.S. Navy Seabees. That is where I first decided to become an electrician. I have learned some powerful early life lessons and met some of the most memorable characters early on in my career. I entered my first union electrical shop back on December 10th, 1995. I was excited to get that call for the first time. It was like, oh, this is really happening. As a first-year electrician's apprentice, I was considered, quote, green by my peers. Some journeymen would approach us and try to tell us that we're lower than dog shit or something like that. Obviously, that was all said in jest. That's how I've always taken everything, with humor. Humor has been a very, very effective tool in navigating the waters of the construction industry. It didn't take long to discover that my schedule was about to become very full. Prior to that, I had a rather, what I would consider, small schedule dealing with an infant. I know I'm going to hear people say, oh, this is the hardest work, but I juggle that and a full-time job. So I have a different perspective, that's all. I quickly became immersed in my new work that consisted of college courses, obviously the job, apprenticeship school, my one-year-old, and my new house that I bought as a 20-year-old kid. I bought a foreclosure that needed plenty of time and money to remodel, therefore I was game for the overtime. The juggling of my new schedule left me with limited free time. This schedule was a very different change from my life in the U.S. Navy as a construction electrician in the Seabees. My husband and I were both recently discharged from the military at that time and were looking to start a new life as civilians. We first settled within the New York City suburbs to be with his family. My family is out in Oregon. Thinking back, I had this huge fantasy with what I thought my new life was going to become. That life required way deeper pockets than what I currently had. I'm glad that I have the capacity to laugh at how naive I was as a young woman. It is fair to say now that I bit off way more than I could chew. The beauty of that was I was too stubborn to stop this new schedule since I craved this idea of my future. Despite being rather naive, I had an innocent approach to it. Because of my innocence, I didn't realize that sharing personal data at work was a huge mistake that I do not recommend to apprentices coming into this business. Rather foolishly, I discussed my relationship openly with my coworkers. I didn't feel ashamed of anything that I had going on in my life. I remember sitting with the crew at break when the topic of my being married came up at work. The focus then shifted to the fact that I was wearing my wedding ring in band. My coworkers warned me that I should not wear it to work. The warning didn't register that it was for my own safety. I went on a mini rant that my ring is symbolic of my love for my husband. As a result of my devotion, I shared that I would be willing to lose a finger so I could just keep it on. Thinking back, I was totally opening up myself for further criticism. Reflecting even further, this response was typical nonsense a 20-year-old would say when in love. I remember feeling defensive about my choice to wear my ring while at work. I should have been more open as to what they were trying to tell me. This is the price of being young and in love. You had the guys who were genuinely worried for my safety, and then you had some folks who were just bitter by their life experiences. At the time, I was not quite there yet with my bitterness. I got my first exposure to typical bitter electricians on this very first job site. The average coworker was very vocal about telling me that I would be divorced and miserable in no time. As expected, I chose to defend my marriage and tell them that they were wrong. I felt that I was entitled to be positive and happy in a world surrounded by disgruntled construction workers. My first job also gave me my first experience with Teledata work. I liked low voltage work at first since it felt sophisticated. I worked on this Teledata project for a foreman along with some seasoned journeyman electricians. A nickname for a journeyman in this business, or a journeywoman, would be a mechanic. Doing Teledata work was both a new experience and rather exciting. I was fresh, young, and very willing to learn at the time. I truly had no idea of what I was stepping into when I first entered the apprenticeship program. I had no idea that I would encounter some bitter prejudice against my gender. After all, I completed a rigorous A-school program in the U.S. Navy Seabees and received literally no pushback. The program involved climbing 45-foot utility poles with wood pole climbing gear. They're called gaffs. The final test was to quickly climb up to the top of the 45-foot utility pole, grab a 200-pound dummy off the top of the pole, put it on your back, and race to the bottom and have a great time. I completed my final test in about 4 minutes. I don't remember the exact time, but I remember it was around 4 minutes. And I passed. The sentiment was, if you passed that program, you belonged where you landed for your duty station. Logically, it is wild to have a coworker dismiss you who has never even been challenged in their life in a military manner. However, people do it all the time. I learned quickly that I would develop a constant need to prove myself and earn a spot on the job site amongst my coworkers. In addition to the gender-based prejudice, I also encountered a taste of prejudice against minorities of many races while on the job site. After all, I was an apprentice back in the 1990s, and I had grown up on the West Coast in Oregon and did not have much exposure to diversity. My first brush with prejudice was an eye-opener for me when I experienced it for the very first time in boot camp. As a kid who follows logic, I never understood the logical reason for being prejudiced based upon the external shell and not a person's terrible personality. To this day, I challenge a person to produce a logical thought pattern on the subject of being prejudiced. Nobody has met that challenge yet. I'm still waiting. By the time I got to my first project as an apprentice, the hidden layers of prejudice still lurked in the shadows. I learned later on that by associating myself with minorities, I was subjected to speculation on whether I was romantically linked to various minority union brothers. As a kid, I didn't realize the magnitude of it being such a big deal. I found out right away the level of raunchiness to where people are willing to go with their ultra-wild romantic associations. Over the years, I have heard through the construction rumor mill of a few tall tales about myself. Unfortunately, People will talk about you in this business whether you deserve it or not. Some of these rumors were well over the top and such savage in nature. One rumor I heard was that I was having sex with an entire group of fellow African-American apprentices, eloquently known as, quote, running a train. This same group of friends were the first people who opted to speak with me while we all attended apprentice school. I felt that the silent treatment in a big way from other students during the first 2 years of my apprenticeship. I would often spend time laughing and joking with my favorite group of guys before class started. I would sit with them during the monthly apprentice meetings in the auditorium. I am sure that my constant association with my pals fueled speculation and rumors as to my relationship with these guys. I'm not concerned with the speculation of what people think I'm about, nor am I willing to shun anyone who has made first attempts to be cool and friendly with me. This pool of fellow journeymen are all still considered as my good friends to reconnect with on occasion to this day. Thinking back, I know that another possibility for the rude work rumors came from the fact that my husband was of a mixed race. He looked Italian or Spanish in nature. As an 18-year-old kid, I didn't even think to ask him as to his background when I first met him. It didn't matter, since it was love at first sight, where we moved rather quickly with our relationship, without a care in the world. I have made the mistake of honestly answering questions posed at work regarding my marriage early in my apprenticeship while at work. After all, I was never ashamed of my husband's mixed heritage upon my discovery. I told a handful of coworkers when prodded with questions that my husband's father was a well-known African-American musician. I learned quickly that these details could be used against me and rumors could be spun far from the truth. Thinking back, I'm deeply disappointed that I had nowhere near the level of sex that I was accused of via the nasty job rumors. I still find it amazing that a small detail is all that some people need to run wildly with a distorted perception of another person. Then again, wild and crazy rumors are quite humorous to hear about out loud. I initially found it highly frustrating that people in this business automatically think the worst about people. I'm glad that I learned the art of humor and ball breaking to diffuse many of these bombs. It's my favorite, it's almost like a hobby. Despite the heavy negative job site mindset, I have dealt effectively with coworkers along the way and may have managed to change their initial opinions of me. I have endured plenty of coworkers who would religiously, quote, break my horns in the beginning and then grow to like me eventually. In retrospect, I think some people tested me to see what I was made of. My apprenticeship has taught me how to easily recognize the different cast of characters on the job site. I would work to categorize in my mind these different types of coworkers according to their views on life. It's not an exact science, since coworkers can throw curveballs that don't flow their flow of logic. I would pick up on a coworker who would more than likely tolerate my presence as their coworker. They would then maintain their negative opinions towards me quietly. I much prefer the fellow who is rather blunt with his thoughts on me. While it sounds harsh to hear, you know exactly where they're coming from and where they are going. It is rather dangerous to encounter people who are nice to your face while they are secretly trying to sabotage my livelihood behind the scenes. Therefore, I prefer the coworker known as the guy who is quite vocal about his disgust with a female in, quote, invading the job site. Despite their objection to my presence and negative opinion, I know exactly what to expect. There is no mystery as to their position, and I can ultimately respect that. It is not like I'm also forced to go home with them. The funny thing is that we spend more time at work than at home. Don't remind me. Of course, we cannot forget the dynamics between myself and other female co-workers on the job. I have been on job sites over the years alongside other female journeywomen and apprentice electricians. Remarkably, I managed to feel even more uncomfortable working with other females on the job. I believe I was more uneasy around fellow females versus my male co-workers who were within another female's presence. They won't believe that, but it's true. I felt like that I did not have the same sense of freedom to say whatever comes out of my mouth when other females are present. Sadly, it almost always manages to become a competitive environment with more than one female on the job. Considering this fact, I know to choose my words carefully in regards to another female on the job. I know of a few females who did not like me around since they were no longer the center of the attention. I view a job site as a place to go get a job complete while making the work fun and having some laughter along the way. I do not care to be the center of attention as much as you think that I do like that. I didn't when I worked with the tools. I prefer to be regarded as the hard worker or the woman that, quote, works like a man than to be known as eye candy. The most frustrating part of working in this business is to show up on a job after a lazy female has just left the job before my arrival. Due to her past appearance on the job, I am already perceived as another lazy female. I must then work very hard to erase that prejudice. I have even witnessed a female on the job who would daily spend the majority of her day socializing and selling merchandise to different trades while she was supposed to be working. This especially infuriated me at the time, since I will come behind her at some point in my career, and I must erase that prejudice. As an apprentice, I also learned that electricians love and absolutely live for drama and negative reactions from our coworkers. Some of my male coworkers in one shop told me that another female did not embrace my presence since she perceived that the guys liked me more than her. The guys were not shy about running with that revelation and letting her know that I was more fun to be around and a better worker on the job. I am pretty certain that this knowledge was delivered to her in an effort to see her reaction and be thoroughly entertained by her job site meltdown. After all, I will admit that I also found messing with coworkers to be a high sense of entertainment on a normally boring job. I will admit, I always used to join in on the fun, so I'm no different than anybody else. However, I had some limits as to what I was willing to say and do in order to get a response. I knew of some guys who would go all the way to a person's house and town in order to break their chops. Pranks such as ordering a ton of gravel to be delivered in a person's driveway with the bill in the mailbox was very extreme in nature, yet this was something that was done. I did have a great working experience with a female journeywoman named Melissa on a security job while I was an apprentice. She and I were given a task to install door entry security pads and contacts along stairwell doors. This job was to be performed in 6 months with half a dozen people. She and I managed to complete this job in half the time with just the two of us. We were elated to get recognition and an, quote, attagirl letter from the CEO of the organization. Despite our great efforts, guys from the shop would still have negative comments to say about our accomplishment. We were known as, quote, Team Bush among some of the guys in the shop. I will admit that I was highly amused at the impromptu nickname, and Melissa laughed at it as well. I'm sure that this nickname was created in part due to the fact that the guys were jealous and surprised by our success. Despite Melissa's hard work and determination, she was often picked on by other male coworkers. I had even witnessed a guy lie about work she performed in an effort to get her into trouble and potentially fired. This guy was not an ordinary worker, but a foreman and a long-standing journeyman within the shop. His input carried a lot of weight amongst shop's management. I have a theory as to why he reacted so negatively towards Melissa. A huge number of male co-workers respond best to females on the job who were in the middle of the road as far as attractiveness is concerned. A female who is physically not able to carry material and perform tasks is considered absolutely useless. Coworkers would react negatively to her presence. Meanwhile, a female that is strong, capable, and smart is a great combination, and a pass may be given to her as far as acceptance on the job site. Sadly, the kicker was her appearance. I made quite a few observations over the years before drawing this conclusion. If a female has the trio of fine qualities yet not visually appealing, she is treated harshly and rather unfair at times. On the other hand, a female that is very attractive and very feminine looking is also harshly treated. This is due to my theory that many males do not associate attractive, smart, and feminine females with being capable of performing work. I don't believe unattractive females are associated with being capable of performing work either. It's like a weird observation that I've made over the years. Based upon my observations over the years, my recommendation to females entering the construction industry would be to not wear makeup or do their fingernails while working. Wearing makeup gives such a mixed perception to male coworkers that they end up rejecting these females. I know it's silly, but that's my conclusion that I've drawn over the years of observing, listening to feedback after a particular female was on the project or near the project, and it was brought up, say, coffee or lunch break. The females who are somewhat attractive without makeup, very strong, hardworking, and capable of performing the work are best received in the work environment. The flexible personality must also come along with the package, aka having a sense of humor. Admittedly, a successful female in a construction environment must walk a fine line. She must have a great sense of humor, be fully able to take on ribbing by coworkers, and have a sharp tongue to deliver a smart comeback to the ribbing. A high level of respect is given to females who have the right combination of characteristics. This type of female is even capable of breaking down barriers on some of the most stubborn male coworkers, who actually made an exception for this female coworker. Although she won't completely change her male coworkers' long-standing and deeply rooted perception towards females, this is a positive step in the right direction. Being consistent with the desire to learn and being willing to work hard go a long ways towards giving that female worker a, quote, pass within her crew as part of being with the team. My attitude towards negative coworkers has never been to make them like me and other females in the industry. My only goal at work was to be professional, perform my job, and to be able to work together to complete the task. It is unrealistic and wasted energy to try to get anyone to embrace your presence on the job when they clearly don't, or to worry about the fact. The magic of this approach is that some of these male coworkers see the fruits of hard work and determination, and they eventually respected my grit and determination. Admittedly, always proving yourself can be quite exhausting. Over many years of trying to do it each time you go out to work in a new crew, I learned quite early that construction workers jointly share humor in the art of, quote, breaking chops. I learned the art of breaking chops really early. My first attempt at breaking chops was during my first work Christmas party. While at the party, I noticed a fellow worker who was married with children walking around the Christmas party with two females. One woman was a dark-haired Latina, and the other woman was like a cheap bottle blonde, more chunky Latina. It was obvious that the girls were hanging out with the co-workers so that they could take advantage of the open bar, courtesy of our boss, of course. As soon as the time was right, I was going to make my move and pounce to get some laughs. After watching the co-worker and the females for a while, the trio approached where I was sitting and ordered some more drinks. I jumped up and gave the coworker a big, huge hug, like I just saw him for the first time that night, and I had not seen him in ages. I asked him how was his wife and his kids. Meanwhile, he was standing behind the two females, trying to gesture me with his hand to his throat, obviously back and forth to stop talking. The entire bar, filled with construction workers, heard my interaction with the coworker and erupted in laughter. Yes, I realize it was snitches get stitches. Probably could have been seen that way, but I felt like I wanted to break his balls at that moment, so I did. I surprised the crowd and impressed my general foreman with my ball-breaking dialogue. The general foreman approached me after the interaction, patted me on the back, and gave me kudos for my chop-breaking skills. I felt so proud to be able to successfully pull this off, and get a great reaction. I was really starting to feel at this point that I could be good at breaking chops, like one of the guys. It is definitely an art and must be done on the fly and in a matter of seconds. My goal was to be just as funny as the guys and to never give anyone a reaction when they break my chops. One of my favorite things I have learned to do over the years has been to take a disgusting remark that has been said to me and counter it with an even more disgusting retort. Of course, the story of how I broke the coworker's chops in front of his female companions became a job sensation the next week while at work. It didn't take long to meet with some characters who acted very strange and had become job site personalities whenever they were on any job. I crossed paths with a journeyman by the name of Kurt. This guy's nickname was Kurt in a Coma because he was coined as crazy and often said and did wacky things. This was an addition to his wild outbursts that would erupt on the job after a coworker would say something to trigger his reaction. He was often doing crazy things like sitting down in front of a large picture window on snowy days in the winter during a coffee break. We all watched him get up and adjust an imaginary television knob while complaining he can't get a decent television picture. Because this guy often had unpredictably loud outbursts, he had to work alone. He came in one afternoon and started screaming about how his helper disappears like clockwork daily at 8:30 a.m. and in the afternoon around 2 p.m. Upon his outburst, it was revealed to him that his helper was going to get coffee for the men. The look of surprise and disbelief at this new revelation was priceless to anyone who witnessed his reaction. I would go to work again with Kurt as his apprentice a few years later in my apprenticeship. The apprentice assigned to work with Kurt was also a rather unique person. This apprentice, named Leland, was in my 5-year apprenticeship class. Leland got the nickname, quote, hide and seek for $1,000 a week, not long after becoming a full-fledged journeyman. Leland is a dark-skinned Jamaican man with a medium build and a beer belly. He was rather hard on the eyes, with a set of teeth that stuck straight out of his mouth. He is a sweetheart, though, and smart like a fox, I must say. Along with these daggers of teeth, his breath was difficult to endure for any length of time. I had the pleasure of sitting next to Leland in apprenticeship school for about 5 years. Of those many years in class, I was... I don't know if I should say this because... He's gonna figure out who the fuck it is. Of those many years in class, I was often forced to breathe for hours through my dirty work shirt. I'm sure I've offered several packs of gum to him in class over the years. Sometimes he would take the gum and other times he would not. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. I had often envisioned, while in class, that I wanted to present him a giant-sized toothbrush and matching giant-sized toothpaste. Then again, at the time, I was working multiple jobs and taking on multiple education courses and had no time to look for these handy hygiene tools if they even existed. I chose to just suck up the smelly class sessions and move on. One of my most memorable visions of Leland was when I would see him walking to the gang box at the end of the day. Leland would have a thin coating of this gray powdery substance called Monocoat all over his face, hair, shoulders, front and back of his shirt. Leland's job was to knock out chunks of Monocoat from the deck pan overhead and the steel junior beams and main supporting steel beams that butt up to the deck pan. The tool of choice used for this task is a 10-foot stick of PVC pipe. Even with a 10-foot tool, the powder substance still manages to thoroughly coat the person performing the task. These undesirable tasks are most often given to apprentices in an effort to break them into the business. The purpose of knocking out this Monocoat is to place a group of flexible metallic cables into the pan to travel between the electrical panel and its final location. The scary part of seeing him in this condition was that he was not wearing a face mask. This means that his lungs were filling up with these powdery fibers each and every day. There is no telling how much damage has been done to his lungs due to this exposure. I know I've had plenty of exposure as well, because I don't like wearing masks. I have heard from many sources on the job over the years that his gray powdery substance is no longer used in California. I would imagine that the health effects won't be seen for another 25 to 30 years, just like asbestos. Leland was often seen bathing in the monocoat that covers the steel beams and scaring women who worked in the building. He was staring and stalking women so much, he was banned from the floor some women occupied since he made them feel uncomfortable. Then there was another guy named Harry. Harry thought he could break my chops, so I fought back and almost made him cry like a bitch ass. Harry was an apprentice who had a year or two more time in the business than I did. Most guys on the job did not like Harry at the time, since he was a real smart mouth. To my amazement, Harry started working on me immediately by trying to get under my skin. He would start first thing in the morning by saying nonsense about how I can't perform tasks because I'm a girl. He would continue to needle me on a daily basis about my gender and baseless claims of being inept. My first response was to ignore him. I was hoping that he would lose steam with my lack of reactions and back off of me. This tactic did not work, since he couldn't help but throw mud at me on a daily basis. After receiving a few shots fired, I decided I was going to fire back. My first strategy was to tie Harry into being a mama's boy on almost anything that he was doing or would say. I would tell him that his mother didn't wake him up on days he was late to work. I would ask him if his mother made his lunch or if his dad still spanks him when he's bad. I would ask him if his mother gives him a bottle since he sometimes had a white residue on his upper lip. I started needling him so much he approached me and tried telling me to stop. It's like the balls on this motherfucker. He went on to say that if I was a guy, he would kick my ass. I felt such joy to see that a guy who had attempted to make me miserable was now cowering in the corner, waving the white flag in defeat. The story of how I made Harry cry spread around the job site like wildfire. Because of his cry for mercy, he was needled on a daily basis by the other co-workers. This gave many co-workers great satisfaction, since Harry was not popular on the job and needed to be knocked down a few pegs. Needless to say, he stopped bothering me shortly thereafter. There is nothing worse than a person who can dish out the verbal diarrhea, yet cannot take it. I got to run into him many years later on a deck project. I then got the opportunity to break his chops while he formed a bone pile of bad conduit right outside my electrical closet. How perfect that was. I thoroughly enjoyed ribbing the hell out of him for being stupid enough to leave his evidence within my line of sight. Before moving forward with giving a coworker a hard time, you must be prepared to field return fire. Developing a thick skin is an essential requirement as a construction worker. If you can't stand the heat, then stay the hell out of the kitchen. That's all I can say. I have learned quite a few valuable lessons over the years while on various projects. There's some guys that start in on me, and then I just lick my chops like I can't wait to return fire and watch him cry like a little bitch. I learned about the construction job culture, the delicate art of ball breaking, and how to navigate amongst my coworkers and deal with just about each and every personality. Dare I say that each personality type is almost as if they have their own specific programming that is predictable. Many of my coworkers would say that they have people figured out by coffee time. When that claim is made, I'm sure it is intended to say a generalized knowledge of an individual. It is impossible to have your finger on the pulse of a personality 100%. I'm glad that we are all not alike with our personalities, since that would be boring as hell. Thankfully, the racism that I first encountered on the job site over 25 years ago has decreased over the years. I would be a fool to say that it has been eradicated. I believe the new generation of people are expecting better of each other compared to the older generation. The intensity of sexual harassment has slowly faded over the years as well. I have faced, and I don't mean to laugh about it, it's just I've developed such thick skin and a sense of humor when I've encountered any of it over the years. My knee jerk is to laugh at it, so just know that if you ever hear me laugh when I'm talking about some of this stuff, it's just because I've developed a thick skin, and that is my way of dealing with it, by using humor. I used to have a general foreman tell me that sexual harassment for Leslie starts at 7:01 a.m. I mean, what can you do other than laugh and then roll with it? Because God help you if you allowed any of it to get under your skin, then you would run for the hills. The average person who walks in when there's a group of people around you that do not want you to be there, the last thing you need to do is show them your weak side. That's the worst thing that you can do. You just might as well hand them the knife to sever your arteries. What else can you do other than develop thick skin and a wicked sense of humor? As I was starting to say, the intensity of sexual harassment has slowly faded over the years as well. I've faced every form of sexual harassment with a heavily laden humorous response. Yes, that is a future topic to dive into in the future. Evolutions of thought take many years to change the mindsets of society. The emergence of a strong woman within society is not something I would have predicted over 25 years ago either. I'm thrilled to see the shift amongst society despite the fact that it has been slow to change and very much long overdue. I'm honestly thrilled. That is one of the things I would have never predicted. Like, when I first picked up the tools, I would have never predicted that society would be celebrating strength in a woman. That to me was so unheard of. If anything, I've encountered, say, such as my dating career, that men find it intimidating. So to actually have someone who champions that and embraces it and doesn't deem it as a threat is something that I have yet to see, other than a couple of, I guess they say it only takes one person to be cool with it. I never thought I would see it in my lifetime, so it's cool to see it slowly peeking its head within the masses of society. Now, this wraps up this episode, where I discuss a few early life lessons and some characters that I met along the way as an apprentice. I apologize that my voice is not up to snuff. If you hear it rattling here and there, it's because I'm trying to get out of this wintertime illness and get out on the other side. Hopefully, my next podcast, I will sound better. I thank you for listening this far. I wish you a great day. Peace out, Cub Scout.
This wraps up another episode on the Verbally Disastrous podcast that can be found on over 20 podcast platforms, including Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Deezer, Pandora Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. For more information, head over to our website at www.constructiontales.com. I thank you for listening and have a great day. This podcast is protected through the U.S. Copyright Office as well as the Writers Guild of America.